Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to this episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Thank you for listening and your continued feedback. If you have suggestions or you want me to dig in with a specific guest, please write to me at shubhanjan@pitch.link or message me on LinkedIn. Both links available in the show notes. Welcome to the second of the two episodes rounding off 2025. This has been the year the trade show and events business made a comeback. At the Trade Show Podcast, we have had a series of insightful conversations with guests heading the largest trade bodies to iconic shows, research experts who are investing their time in looking at data and analyzing influences and trends. We have had CEOs of some of the most influential companies as well as thought leaders, and over two episodes, we revisit the topics and insights that were shared on the show. The topics, as you'd imagine, covered a lot. From best practices to motivations, from strategy to ROI, we covered a lot of ground. What exhibitors must know, the need for facilitation by organizers, engagement on the floor, and most critically, the follow-up post-show, all figure in the conversations I had with my guests. Take a listen, and if you find any of it interesting, don't forget to check out the episode links which are shared in the show notes below. Wish you all an exciting and healthy new year in 2026. We have some great conversations lined up to start the year with a bang. Let's dive in. Larry Kulhawick.
So the power of trade shows is the element of emotion and how it is that we attend the show, we see new things, we meet old peers, and we gain some knowledge and perhaps find something we were looking for that created what I call a eureka moment. Eureka! I discovered this new process that helped my company, blah, 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 and came back and actually made a difference.
Enrico Gallorini.
So many historians say that the secret power of the humans is the ability to create stories. So use the brain in a different way than all the other animals, because we need to tell the other the stories to survive. And events were the moments where those stories were teach, share. And there are some patterns that are still the same since probably 60,000 years ago, where our ancestor in front of the campfire, and the people sitting there and meeting, but not just randomly. Because one of the first thing of events is the concept that I found it so important even today, that is the concept of rituals and rituality.
Karina Bauer.
People overwhelmingly come to a trade show and they come to IMEX to do business. We see that. We know that anecdotally, but we also see that in our surveys of our exhibitors and our buyers. What's the top reason you're coming to get leads, to place RFPs, to find, you know, to have the meetings with the other side? So that is the core of what we do. And if we don't get that right, all of the rest falls away. But if we do get that right, then all of the rest is incredibly important for ensuring that people are coming not just because they have to, but because they want to. And that's how you build loyalty. That's how you build retention. And that's how you build also the delta of people in different sectors who are coming. And that then gives us another benefit of people coming, which is not just for the business, but also because they're coming to an event that transcends that transactional element and also gives them an insight and a microcosm of the world of events for that three or 4 days.
Larry Kulhawick.
The question was, how did trade shows start? And Bob, my co-author, is truly a historian who starts with the world fairs and the world fairs of Europe primarily.
Right.
And it obviously came to the United States in due time. But at World Fairs, there were no specific industries. It was anything that was new, anything that could be presented as innovative. And so many of the most famous discoveries and inventors introduced themselves at World Fairs. And their products became such that they were world renowned, from Heinz Ketchup to Thomas Edison to Otis Elevator.
Tahira and Dean.
You know, we spend a lot of time at events meeting, you know, and IMEX is a great example, which is, you know, my day job is working at IMEX, where I do produce the content for IMEX. And so we have about 200, more than 200 conference sessions that happen on top of a trade show, you know, and in America last year, there was 83,000 one-to-one meetings. So I clearly understand that we want to meet for business and we want to meet for learning. But what happens all around that is a lot of networking events, and you can't look down a hallway without seeing people hugging. That's what events do.
David Pickenbaugh.
Yeah, I tell you right now, the corporate marketplace is really strong. And I think that's somewhat unusual because usually in any kind of economic sort of turmoil, what we see is the corporate market either holds tight or constricts. And we're not seeing that. We're actually seeing the opposite. We're seeing a more robust investment, more commitment to in-person events. And that's very encouraging.
Vijay Sharma.
Yeah, I just want to make a couple of points with regards to US and Europe. They are saturated markets. It's well-defined. And as per our research, it's well-established. But I still feel that these markets still matter a lot, because if you really look at all the mergers and acquisitions are already happening in these two markets, and mainly driven in United Kingdom and United States. And then second point I wanted to make was, you wanted to understand the economic impact of these exhibitors. What do they have when they participate in an event? My understanding is it's good to look at a country rather than an exhibition to understand the economic impact an exhibition or an exhibitor would have. And the best country I can think of is Germany.
David Pickenbaugh.
The other big opportunities for growth for us is in the for-profit trade show space. I think you see a lot of consolidation going on in the industry, a lot of M&A or acquisition activity. And I think as those investments occur, the key people behind those investments are trying to drive efficiency and drive profit. And outsourcing is typically seen as a very efficient way to drive some of those factors for a deal, for an acquisition deal. So I think we still see a lot of opportunity there.
Lorenzo Garbuzo.
In terms of maturity, clearly see that European markets and also US markets, they are to a certain extent stagnant in terms of growth projections. And that's due to their size and the fact that they are close to their maximum in a way. We do expect some growth, but it's in the low digit rate. To put it in numbers, we forecast something between 1 to 2.5% in compound annual growth rate in net rented space for Europe and North America, while other markets are expected to do much better. Again, we were referring to Saudi Arabia, so that might be a good example. We expect growth of close to 10%.
Vijay Sharma.
The region is going at a phenomenal rate, and it's kind of complementary to what the market is doing, in the sense that how they are diversifying from their hydrocarbons, and then how they are tapping on trade fairs as an industry to stimulate their economy. So it's kind of a blueprint, because I think a lot of emerging economies want to do that. They want to improve their trade. They want to, you know, move away from greenhouse gases, so forth and so on. So I think Saudi Arabia is setting up a blueprint. What other nations can do, or at least they can do some pilots in their own countries to stimulate their economy.
Suraj Dhawan.
India is now able to offer world-class venues. And since Indian economy is doing reasonably well as compared to the rest of the world, this is the market to do business with. And exhibitions are primarily meeting places where buyers and sellers get together. And if an economy is doing reasonably well, both overseas people and Indian people would like to meet. And we feel our exhibitions in India offer and serve that medium. Today, India is aspiring to be a global supplier. And India has a large domestic market as well. So as a growing domestic market, there is a demand for new products, new technologies. There is increasing wealth, and people would like to buy more stuff. And that is where exhibitions can give people choices. Likewise, as India plans to be an exporter as well, exhibitions are a good medium where overseas buyers can come and look at products from India, visit factories, and do good business together.
David Peckinpah.
I think where we see sort of challenges on the outskirts are right now, from a U.S. perspective, is inbound international visitation. That's certainly taking a hit right now. And that is particularly true from our North America neighbors. Right. We're suffering quite a bit from Canada, and we're suffering quite a bit from Mexico. And that has to do with some of the more geopolitical issues that are swirling around, from tariffs to governmental relationships. So, but we're still very bullish on the marketplace, very very confident in the future. And so, right now it's a very strong marketplace with some challenges that we all are having to deal with.
Vijay Sharma.
If you see Germany, the trade fair industry is deeply intertwined with the economy. And that's why you have all the different messes in different parts of Germany, because they implicitly understand that we need to build these venues. And this was thought, I think, a couple of decades back. It's not a new thinking. And they wanted to make sure that these messes or these exhibition grounds connect East and West. So if you really look at Germany, most of their events are international events. And that's a good barometer for the global economy as well, to understand, okay, how the trade is flowing. I'm not sure if we can say the same thing at this point in time, but at least until last year, that was the case, that Germany, if you really look at the exhibitions happening in Germany, it can give you a sense of understanding how open markets are, how the trade is flowing, what is the industry looks like. And there are a bunch of reports from a bunch of associations, industry body, which comes out, and they give you an understanding, okay, this is what is happening.
Suraj Dhawan.
See, one big India advantage is that over the last 5 years, several fantastic new venues have come up. We see three large venues in Delhi. We see expansion in Chennai. We see expansion in Hyderabad, Bangalore. We see a world-class venue having come up in Mumbai. So what event and MICE and exhibition infrastructure India is offering to the world is absolutely modern and world-class. And I think at this point of time, we have some headway on that. So when people are looking at our venues, they are pleasantly surprised that how IT savvy they are, how well planned they are. And we tell people that, look, you are having venues which are 50 years old, 40 years old, but our venues are less than 5 years old. So they have been kept, built up, keeping the modern requirements in mind. And you will always have a more pleasant experience.
Karina Bauer.
hosted buyers with us, we run a model where we call it a buyer-led model. What that means is that we're inviting buyers to register as hosted buyers, and when they do so, they commit to making a minimum number of meetings per day at the show. So that's their commitment to us and to our exhibitors, who ultimately are paying for them to be there. But what we don't do, which is different from other shows, is dictate who they should meet with and when they should have those meetings, except for during the trade show hours, of course. And we do that because we the minimum numbers that we give are about half of a day. Now, some of our buyers, especially those who may work for agencies and are representing multiple corporates, they may want to have 15 meetings a day, and that runs from 10 till 5.
David Pickenbaugh.
And so what we found is that what was missing in the event space was a true commitment to design and intentional design. And what was happening was, in most events, it was cut and paste, right? Is you rinse, wash, and repeat and do the same thing year after year after year after year at your meetings. Well, that didn't make any sense. So we developed a robust design practice. We started creating that at Meritz in 2011. Our head of brand, Greg Bogue, worked hand in hand with Jim Gilmore and has built that. We now have a master designer internal certification program that we do on an annual basis. We're just kicking off our next class at the end of September. And it's really foundational to how we work with every single one of our customers.
Marco Barozzi.
It's about technology. And I understand, and this also from exhibition organizers, I mean, I understand that sometimes exhibitors are not familiar. For example, when you talk about a business match for a show, you know, which to me is the most important thing today. I mean, every show, every trade fair, every exhibition should have a business match platform, okay? And I understand sometimes exhibitors have problems in using that platform, and maybe you have to give them some assistance or support them in order to make them understand.
Karina Bauer.
I think what that means for us as an industry is we need to help these people who are event marketeers or maybe more global marketeers, where they see events as a possible channel and one of many channels. We need to help them understand the industry better, help them understand how they can measure success, because that's what they're used to doing in a digital world, and help them really drive and create experiences that are going to be successful for their company objectives. So that's the area where we see it growing significantly now, but also in the future. And I think that transcends different sectors.
Josiah Tolby.
But I always felt like there was a missed opportunity to connect the buyer to the booth at the show, right? When times were slow, you know, I've got this scheduling in this pre-environment and I got to optimize the aisle here. But when things slow down, someone who couldn't make the show, it'd be great if I could find a way to engage with them. And technology never really opened that door. But I think if that door was opened, it would set a much better example and educate people kind of on, you know, here's the booth and here's where I'm at, right? And give some of the same sort of context of experience that could carry on in some capacity, even when the booth wasn't there.
David Pickenbaugh.
Right, the organizer's goal is to make those exhibitors as successful as possible. And the exhibitors want to be as successful as possible. Now, I can tell you it's a widespread of approach and skill set exhibitor to exhibitor. Some really get it. They know how to really organize and execute an effective trade show booth. And there are a lot that still don't get it. And it's amazing to me to this day that, you know, you'll walk by and someone's eating in the booth and not paying attention. And, you know, you just scratch your head because of the investment these companies are making. But the ones that are really good and sophisticated, they have their own data analytic tools. They know exactly what to do with those leads, and they're very efficient in the follow-up and the sales and marketing process.
Suraj Dhawan.
I'm proud to say that with the Bureau of Indian Standards, our association, the Indian Exhibition Industry Association, has come up with standards on how to organize exhibitions. So India will have a BIS standard on organizing exhibitions. We have launched and successfully completed two editions of our exhibition training course. It's a 40-hour course called Professional Exhibition Management, where we have 27 modules taught over 5 days, done by industry professionals, where we are training young and aspiring exhibition professionals how they can get better.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. You are listening to a Bizcast Audio Original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode. Tahira and Dean.
An average business traveler will go to 3 to maybe 6 events a year. And those 3 to 6 events might include continuing education credits that they require for their job. Yeah. And it might include time with peers and collaborators. It might include travel, or it might be more local. All of those things, just because you're going to a 2-day event to get your continuing education credits for your highly professional organization doesn't mean you shouldn't enjoy the time that you're there.
David Pickenbaugh.
A couple of things that we've learned is, and it's something we've been saying now for a number of years, is that the impact of that is that now we find that time is the currency of events. And that's something I talk a lot about, is how people now invest their time is really, really critical to them. And so if they're making the decision to get on a plane, travel, stay in a hotel, attend a conference, the value that has to be delivered through that event, whether it's a trade show or a corporate association event, has got to be significant. And so I think that's put more onus on the organizer, the designers of those events, so that those individuals are making that decision, right? That I want to invest my time and here's the benefit I'm going to get. And that value outweighs the opportunity to hop online and listen to content. But I think, that's part of it. And I think the other is, from an organizer perspective, you have to provide a unique value in that in-person gathering that simply cannot be done in a virtual environment.
Nancy Drapeau.
The value of trade shows to organizations that send staff are multiple. Not only is it to just, support the buying decision, decisions that need to happen, but it's also a place for training. And professional development is something that is a valued activity and actually has increased, in activity per the research that we did.
Karina Bauer.
But I think often with the buyers, they're looking at their objectives, like the number of new suppliers they met or found, the number of RFPs they were able to take forward and conclude. Sometimes they're also looking at how many other business trips they may have not had to do and how much quicker they've been able to perhaps place business as a result of being at the show. So we've often heard that before as well. So they're just doing it very differently. Interestingly, now within our system, both buyers and exhibitors have access to free lead scanning. So buyers could start to measure it in terms of leads as well, but I'm not sure they're quite doing that yet.
Tahira and Dean.
We have something called a recency effect, which is basically we're going to remember what's most recent. And we have a forgetting curve, and our forgetting curve is incredibly high. Our remembering curve is incredibly low. And so if you look at, I always say, I've worked at IMEX for 3 years. I've been to 18 shows. So I went to many, many events before I started working there. And so, and I always have said, you know, for me, it always goes by in like a minute and a marathon. You know, it's just, it goes from the minute you enter, it's very busy. There's a lot going on. There's many, many, many high peak moments. So you are there for 4 or 5 days, you know, it's a 3 day plus Smart Monday show. So, plus your pre-time and all of that kind of stuff. But it's, you remember about 6 minutes.
Larry Kulhawik.
The rule of thumb in determining a marketing budget is 5% of your overall revenue should be dedicated to marketing. So of that money that's in the 5%, it's divided into 7 components. But of those 7, the biggest piece of the pie is trade shows.
Yes.
I mean, it's hugely bigger amount of money that is dedicated to it, of which companies are approving that budget.
Josiah Tolby.
There's always the challenge of, you know, how versatile do you want to make the event in terms of people's options? How much content do you provide, right? Do you want education, you know, legitimate education to be a part of it? You know, where do you strategically position those things? To make sure that people are getting a good balance of experience, right? You know, the most optimal, you know, kind of engagement experience. But not losing sight of the, you know, the fact that, you know, you sold that booth space and that exhibitor is very dependent on the opportunity to meet with somebody.
Tahira and Dean.
If people don't leave your event feeling more connected to your brand and that you have given them the colleagues, the leadership and the product and the tools to sell that product, they're not going to sell it. They don't sell. You don't have a company. So it's very correlated that you need to connect to the humans at your events.
Nancy Drapeau.
Depending upon the size of the show, but there's always an ongoing effort to keep attendees on the show floor. So from a networking perspective, you know, you've got receptions that can happen during show hours, off show hours. You've got lounges of all varieties, you know, places for people to rest the larger the show. You're going to have those offerings as well as lounges for like-minded people to connect with each other. What's new is concerts, too, right, as a tactic to keep attendees on the show floor longer.
David Pickenbaugh.
The challenge, I think, is that this has been an ongoing dialogue for decades. I mean, I've been in the industry for 40 years. We've been talking about ROI and how to define ROI for 40 years. And I think we're getting maybe closer because of some of the technology and data analytic tools that we have to really prove that. But I think I always turn it around and go back to the individual, which is the organization that's making the investment. The critical thing is, how do they define their ROI? And, you know, we have a design practice that we've started back in 2011. And one of the first things we do is we dig into that with the stakeholders. Is what are the goals and objectives of the event? Why are you making this investment? And what are the results that you expect out of that? Then as your partner, we will help you measure that and then help you define your ROI. I don't think it's universal across the board.
Josiah Tolby.
It's kind of interesting because you look at the custom dev environment to kind of the, you know, self-serve administrative configured environment. And then, you know, AI is starting to play a role in both of those places, right? Whether it's, you know, developing something from a custom perspective or whether it's taking a platform and it's, you know, parameters and starting to do some configuration. So that's a place I'm starting to see is a little bit more trend as people are trying to incorporate it in and find a way to have it, you know, execute something that might have taken, you know, I don't know, 5 hours and just throwing things out there. And now it can do it in, you know, 30 minutes.
Karina Bauer.
We're at the start of the rise of AI, aren't we? And we know that face-to-face interactions are going to become even more important in terms of enabling and engendering trust between brands and companies and their clients and their staff. And so Meetings and business events are going to become increasingly important in that space, but also in the marketing space, because so much of what we are sold to and we see online, we don't know anymore whether it was computer generated or whether it's real and what's real and what's not. And so increasingly, marketeers are really understanding the value of event marketing and face-to-face and live events for driving their marketing metrics and their brand values and their company objectives.
Suraj Dhawan.
In terms of what area where India has also transformed is adaption to technology. Today, event tech in India is supporting the physical exhibitions in a very formidable way. And since India always had an IT advantage, I think the physical exhibition and MICE industry is using it to see that both our exhibitors and visitors have a fantastic, seamless experience for planning for during the show and post-show activities, where I think we have a formidable edge today.
David Pickenball.
You look at what is the impact on, let's say, a trade show attendee, right? How do you use AI to improve the lead retrieval process? How do you use it to improve the attendee experience, right? Because we do a lot of research and study on the next wave of the attendee, right? My generation's quickly out of here, and it's all about Gen Z and Gen X, right? That's 75% of the workforce by 2030. That yeah. also means that's 75% of the attendee base. So how do you use AI to drive what they're looking for, which is sort of mass personal customization, right? I want that event organizer and content to talk to me as an individual. Well, you know, AI can have a dramatic impact on that.
Josiah Tolby.
I think the tech landscape is incredibly difficult. It's very confusing. You know, I've spent a lot of time over the last, you know, year, you know, heavily researching it. And, you know, companies pop up. It's not incredibly difficult to start a company, especially within certain verticals and categories. And so there's just a lot out there. And, you know, to speak to one or the other, you know, is a bit complex, because I think there's a series of things that people should be looking at that aren't being prioritized. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the amount of confusion around what's actually in the market.
David Pickenball.
We've had a robust investment in AI for the last 2+ years. It's been part of our strategic plan. We've got an AI steering committee. We've rolled out AI to every employee in the company. That's using Microsoft Copilot. And I can tell you it's driving a lot of efficiency. But I think there was a perception heading in that AI was going to replace the workforce, right? And that's just, at least in our experience and what we're also observing, is just simply not the case. It's increasing productivity. It's increasing efficiency. It's driving process efficiency. And maybe we don't have to hire as many people, or maybe there's a role we don't have to backfill, but it's certainly not replacing our workforce. There are a couple areas that perhaps in the future might have a little more of an impact, but we're not seeing that. It's sort of the 80-20 rule, right? AI can get you 80% of the way, but that 20% is really the critical part. And that requires human intervention. It requires the expertise and knowledge of our team in order to really deliver the value. So,
Larry Kulhawik.
How do you act differently when you go to another country culturally and follow the rules of that organization or that country, region? And the book has 45 different countries, and it was not written by me. No one person is the expert everywhere in the world. I reached out because I was president of IFAS. I met all the owners of exhibit companies all over the world. And I asked them after I was concluded as president, tell me, when I come to your country, how should I act differently? What should I do differently as an American in particular? And they quickly responded. I was surprised how quickly every one of them, from France and Saudi Arabia and Japan and China, all responded.
Suraj Dhawan.
Today, how the world is calculating carbon credits. The exhibition industry needs to be ready to say that this is how we are contributing. Things will change, but if we don't follow the sustainable practices, we would be losers in the long term. The key question is that what are the sustainable practices? It's very easy to do a 1 hour session on sustainability, but to say, what can I do to say that this is a sustainable practice is a matter of creating the ecosystem. We are in the process of creating what all things can be done as a manual for sustainability. And this we will be soon be sharing with you.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit TradeshowEngage.com. That is TradeshowEngage.com. David Peckinpah.
You know, it's something that has to be taken very seriously about millennials and Gen Z and Xers being the majority of the attendee base in the workforce very, very quickly, right?
Yeah.
And and they have a different set of expectations and needs. And if we're not taking that seriously and not designing of how we need to engage in the way they're all digital natives, right? They have all grown up in a very different way than we did. And so we have to treat them differently. We have to design around them differently, communicate and engage with them very differently. We work with a doctor, Corey Seemiller, who is a particular expert on Gen Z. And she's spoken at virtually every one of our events for the last, I don't know, probably 4+ years. And she's it's fascinating to hear her feedback on how do you design, how do you engage that audience because of their uniqueness.
Enrico Gallorini.
So we gather in this large collective moment as a niche, as an industry, because they are a ritual. We know that we will meet Milan in April for the Design Week. We know that we will meet in September in China for the Autumn Fair. So those moments are still rituals because we know that those 3, 4, 5 days, our niche gather in a place in a specific time. And that time is not driven by the organizer. It's driven by the industry itself.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics, and strategies to leverage the first-party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.